Muslims away from me. With my jingoistic worldview, I'll come following.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard, we're going to drain the swamp. And you go, exactly how many incumbents lost yesterday? A handful at best. You didn't drain the swamp. You just made it deeper and more deadly. And now what's going to happen is a tsunami of bad policy, of every right-wing wet dream that these bizarre think tanks and these well-funded billionaire think tanks have been dreaming up for the last four decades. They're coming. And I think they're going to come in steamroller fashion. Just my thoughts. Anyway, here to give us his thoughts on last night's results and maybe where we go from here, I've asked John Fetterman, mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania, to come talk with us. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, always. Always, Rick, always.
So again, it's my view. We didn't drain any swamp. We just made it worse. We made it deeper and more deadly. And I got to wonder happens when that tsunami wipes away the working class of this country.
I hope your listeners, you know, understand that with the presidency, the Senate, and the House, they run the show. I mean, they're going to fill at least two, if not three, Supreme Court justices. And once they get a supermajority of conservative ones, there goes everything that's near and dear to progressives and or Democrats and or, you know, working labor folks. And it's horrifying. And you know, America has turned over the nuclear codes to a washed up game show, reality show guy with the world's worst comb over. I mean, it's the whole world is literally shell shocked.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I mean, the sad reality is, and I'm glad Hillary Clinton or President Obama or anyone else hasn't said, I hope he fails and all of that, because at the end of the day, our fortunes seem to all be tied to that steamroller ability that the Republicans now have.
Well, I mean, it's like, of course, I hope it goes well, but I mean, excuse me, in 2 weeks, it's going to be some, you know, is he still going to sue all the women that claim that he sexually assaulted them or groped them like he claimed that he was? I mean, if you just run through the roster of the things he did and said during the campaign, and realize now that this man will occupy the same house that Abraham Lincoln or Roosevelt or Teddy Orr or Franklin Delano, it's just a sad day. And Secretary Clinton's confession speech could not have been more gracious, could not have been more dignified, and really contained the essence of a peaceful transfer to power. Even, you know, decked out in purple, her and Bill had a purple to signify red and blue coming together. But I hope it works, but I don't see how that's possible.
Yeah, were you surprised by the results last night? Were you one of the ones? Because I got a bunch of people going, I'm shocked. I'm going, I've been telling you for a long time this is coming.
I'm surprised that he won Pennsylvania. I knew it was going to be close. I figured it would be 2 points or less at the end of the day. I didn't think that he would win by the margin that he did, and and Philadelphia performed too, and so did the Pittsburgh area. Allegheny County and Philadelphia performed. So this wasn't a matter. It was just the suburban rings, the counties like Bucks and Chester around Philly, just performed well. Trump outperformed, and you combine those with the small rural counties that go 60, 70, even 80% Trump, and this is what happens. So.
Were you surprised with the Philly suburbs? Because there was a ton of talk that, you know, the Philly suburbs were going to go heavily for Hillary, especially because, you know, that's where, you know, a large contingent of women votes are, and you know, they were just repulsed by Trump, and yet you look at the numbers, they weren't all that great.
Oh, they were terrible. And the thing is like, when David Plouffe was going around bragging that Pennsylvania will never turn red, I said to, I forget who I was with, I said, he needs to just put a stock in it.
Yeah.
Like, even if he believes that that's true, you just don't go around saying that. And you know, he ate his hat, big time, you know, today. And, you know, this you have to work for every vote. and you have Donald Trump dialing into this, you know, disaffected people, forgotten cities, forgotten places. Like, you know, I mean, that's been my life's work, and it's particularly galling to me to have somebody that goes home and sits on a solid gold toilet pretending that he cares about, you know, old steel towns, you know, like mine or any number of communities out here in Pennsylvania. I don't blame people for reaching out in some kind of desperation or grief or pain seeing their community go downhill over the last 20 or 30 years, but that is not the solution. And I fear it's, you know, what is going to happen over the next 4 years to these places.
What do you see? Where do you see things going from this point? I mean, at the end of the day, you're right. I mean, communities like yours, I think, are going to struggle and suffer. Where do you see things going?
Who knows? He didn't talk about a single policy. All I've ever heard him say is he wants to build a wall. He wants to round up, you know, every undocumented. He wants to, you know, start a trade war with China, and he wants to repeal Obamacare. I mean, those aren't policies. That's not a presidency. That's just this weird, bizarre list of things that arouse the right. I mean, so and they're going to walk all that back. They're not going to build a 30-foot wall across the border. And, you know, all this energy and all of this shock and awe that he just laid out is going to fold up back on itself. It's just a matter of time. And, it's a wake up call. And I think it's a healthy wake up call for the Democratic Party. You know, I always believe that the heart of the Democratic Party was in forgotten places and areas like this across Pennsylvania and across the country. But, you know, if Donald Trump is co-opting, I think that just is a wake-up call for the Democrats to kind of get on the ball with that.
Do the Democrats do an autopsy like the Republicans did in 2012, and do they listen to it?
I don't know. It's going to be tough because, you know, I mean, like Secretary Clinton, I mean, the Clinton family is larger than life. I mean, he was the president. She was going to be the president, you know. She's a civilian now. I mean, they're all civilians now. So, I mean, you know, who's the leader of the party right now? You know, Barack Obama, this is a direct indictment of his legacy. I mean, and Trump's going to do everything he can to dismantle everything that he put together during his 8 years. So it's really, you know, probably going to spend some time in the wilderness because you have a permanent minority in the House. You have a minority in the Senate, and you have Donald Trump in there for the next 4 years. I hope there is something constructive that could come out of this because this result, no one expected this result. There, you know, and the fact that it happened, I think the pollsters have to, you know, have a come to Jesus moment with themselves, all the media outlets. I mean, how can so many people get it so wrong on something so big? It's really remarkable.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, there were a lot of us out there saying that this was a very real possibility based on the based on the fact that, look, people are angry, people are hurting. I just don't see this being the guy who's going to help that. I tend to think it's only going to get worse.
It's like I don't blame somebody that wants relief. It's just what you reach for in order to get that relief, and they reached, in my opinion, the absolute worst thing, and you know, like, you know, check back in Manesson, where, you know, what Manesson looks like 4 years after a Trump president, and he's written so many checks that he's going to have to cash, and I just don't see how it just doesn't all turn on him, because the folks that believed all of his campaign rhetoric are going to rightfully demand all these things, and I just don't see how he gets anywhere close to delivering that. But you know, the whole thing is messed up. You know, the my Senate race ended up being the most expensive in American history. You know, they spent $175 million to call each other names, and you think of what that money could do for, you know, my town, Manesson, McKeesport, Chester, any of these places. I really hope. But sadly, any chance of any kind of progressive reforms are 4 or 8 years away, given what happened today.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, and you bring up a really important point. I mean, the most expensive Senate race in the history right here in Pennsylvania, and you go, you're right. We could have used those resources so much better. And that's where I think the conversation of, how do we get money out of politics? Yet here again, you look at the Republican platform and they're, saying, look, we want more money in politics. We want more free speech of money, which again plays into the hands of the billionaire class, of which now we have a president who is a billionaire. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And historians and presidential scholars will marvel for generations on how a billionaire who owns hotels and buildings and luxury golf courses suddenly became a champion of forgotten places. It's a remarkable bit of showmanship, and you got to give the man credit. He really put on a great show and pulled off the biggest upset in American presidential history, but. Eventually, all this is going to come home to roost, and it's going to be ugly. I genuinely am scared for my three children. I have three young children, and I am genuinely frightened that this man is now commander in chief of our entire military.
Yeah, I mean, as a parent, I'm in the same boat with you. I've got two daughters, 8 and 14, and a son, 10. And, my wife and I sat at the breakfast this morning, staring at each other going, what the, what?
My wife cries on and off. She's been crying on and off all day. I mean, it's like she's devastated. I have a picture of my daughter, 5-year-old, meeting Hillary Clinton for the first time. And she's got this big look of awe and smile on her face. And, and it's just like, my 5-year-old cried this morning. The first thing she asked when she got out of bed was, who won president? And, and to tell her that it was Donald Trump, it literally broke her little heart. And, and I just see what kind of role models we are providing for our daughters when, we elect a man that boasts about grabbing them by the blank as commander in chief. It's really surreal. I don't get it. I don't get it.
But it's something that we're going to have to deal with. And let me ask you this, because at the end of the day, as you said, there are people in your community that supported Trump. There are people who we know, and how do we reach out to them and build a coalition to make sure that the real ugly stuff doesn't happen? Because look, I'm truly afraid of privatized Social Security, privatized Medicare, block grants for Medicaid. I'm the end of the right to join and form unions. There's a lot of stuff that I think working people agree that we should be protecting that I see about to be steamrolled at any day.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just feel like it has to be, it has to switch. The focus has to be back on working people. It has to be, there has to be a reckoning on, hey, what, has free trade been fair trade for communities? Has free trade, has the benefits been unequally distributed? I mean, and it is rigged. It is a rigged economy. The two candidates that had the most energy, early on were Bernie and Donald Trump, and there's definitely the energy out there. And, we plugged into that in our Senate race, and the powers that be in the party really, took a different direction. At the end of the day, the energy was with Donald Trump, and he didn't come by it in an honorable way. And I don't think there's anything sincere behind it, but the ramifications of this will be felt for the next 30 years. I just hope it's something that we can recover from and build back from. I mean, George Bush, it took us 8 years to get back to good from the financial collapse. And George Bush is a Mensa member compared to, what Donald Trump is.
And you bring up an important point, because the only two times Republicans have controlled all three branches of government, 1928 and 2001, and shortly after we had a Great Depression and a Great Recession.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, and we have a washed-up reality TV show host as commander-in-chief, who's declared bankruptcy 6 times, hasn't paid taxes in 20 years, stiffs his employees, buys Chinese steel and aluminum. Who votes for this guy? You know, but, you know, he ran the table. Give him credit. He ran the table.
That he did.
In a fashion unprecedented in American politics. And he has shock and awe. There isn't a single Republican out there that will not fall in line with him at this point. And it's you know, I can only hope it's going to turn eventually when the wheels come off of what Donald Trump is. And it has every other time, you know.
Yep.
But
well,
I don't want my president to have 3 a.m. Twitter fights with you know, aging beauty, you know, queen contestants. You know, it's an embarrassment. And the whole world is looking. And, you know, you always want to respect democracy and the choice of the people. But I find it very difficult to reconcile Donald Trump and a healthy trajectory for our country. It just doesn't seem like that's possible.
I'm right there with you, John. I appreciate you taking some time for us. As we continue the organizing and we begin to the push back, I'd love to have you back again on the program.
Anytime, Rick. It's always an honor, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks so much, John Fetterman, Mayor of Braddock, Pennsylvania. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Who cares about the deficit? We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.